Good morning. It is 10 a.m. and this is the Kenai Conversation, but it is also the return of KDLL Adventure Talks. I'm Jenny Nyman, and we've got some local adventurers in the studio today, and they're going to tell us about their trip to the Gates of the Arctic National Park. It feels a little Arctic around here these days, but they actually went up in July, so we're going to flash back to some hopefully warmer, sunnier memories. In the studio today, we have Jim Bennett.
Hello.
And Wally Hufford.
Hi there.
And Doug Armstrong.
Good morning.
And we are missing a fellow adventurer, right? Who else went on that trip with you?
Julie Stevens, and she might be here any minute.
Excellent. All right. The Alana River, first of all, where exactly?
It's above the Arctic Circle near Bettles, Alaska, in Gates of the Arctic National Park.
Yeah, it's the southern end of the river by Bettles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And as I understand it, this is not the river that you were originally intending on visiting?
No. We were originally looking at the Noatak River. Wally had done some research on that. And when he started asking around and hitting the network to see who wanted to go, four of us put our hands in the air. And we started having some meetings about the Noatak River and started comparing the Noatak to the Alana.
Well, I did a lot of looking around on the internet at trip reports that other people from around the world and around Alaska have done, and they said that the Alana River was a good one. And I liked it because there was also a side trip that we ended up doing, which was taking a backpack trip to the Aragetch Peaks.
Excellent. And this was predominantly a pack raft trip, correct?
It was. We pack rafted about 80 miles. About three quarters of the way down the river, we stopped, took all of our pack raft gear, put it in the woods, and took out our backpacks and hiked about 8.5 miles up to the Aragetch Peaks and 8.5 miles back, and then finished the rest of the Alana River.
Nice. And the packs were not disturbed? No bears munching? No critters getting into your stuff?
We didn't have any problem like that at all. We were, I think, most concerned about the wind blowing stuff away. So we took straps and tied everything to trees and that type of thing. And actually, we saw a lot of bear sign, a lot of wolf sign, a lot of animal sign, but didn't see any bears or wolves. We saw a moose and some caribou.
Yeah, and when we left our gear, we were each carrying two bear barrels for food, and so we left one bear barrel each with food in it and stored those away from where the packs were so that we didn't have food odors near our pack rafts or anything like that.
So you all sound like you know what you're doing in the outdoors if you're planning that far ahead. And as I understand it, you all have been on some adventures together before?
Yes.
Quite a few of them. We've ridden fat bikes. We like fat bikes a lot. So we've ridden fat bikes from Nikiski to the end of the Homer Spit. And then we rode from Nikiski out to Point Possession and back.
And you're talking on the beach, correct?
On the beach, yes. Yep, with our fat bikes. And then 2 years ago, the three of us here did a big trip down at Yakutat, where we flew everything from Yakutat to Lituya Bay, and then started to ride back and had a great adventure.
It was the hardest adventure, the toughest trip that I've ever taken, but that's what you want an adventure for, I think.
Fun in retrospect.
Type 2 fun, we call it.
That's right.
So why pack rafting? What is it that appeals to you about that?
The river does the work. It carries all your gear and it floats down. It's just like the life of Riley there, so.
And I think they were perfectly the best vehicle for the Alana River. When I was talking to the pilot when we were making plans to go, he was saying how the upper portion of the Alana River, which is where we started, had rarely been traveled before the pack raft came along because it's shallow, fast, not very deep. And so nobody wanted to go up there. And with the pack raft, those are perfect conditions, so worked out great.
Yeah, the pack raft only has a couple of inches of draw, so you can get through some pretty shallow water. And if you do need to portage or drag your boat, it's the pack raft's only 7 or 8 pounds, so you're not hauling around a a 70-pound folding kayak or something like that.
So. And weight is a consideration for even getting to the put-in because we took one plane and I think we only came in 100 pounds underweight for all the gear that we could bring. So if we brought a heavier watercraft, we never would have been able to get up there. Yeah. Or would have had to take a couple more planes.
Okay. Well, let's go back to the planning process. What all did you have to do to figure out how to make this work and how long did that take?
I go back to, I looked at a lot of trip reports on the internet. I got maps and looked at the maps and tried to figure out where people had started and stopped and that type of thing. And that's pretty much where I got all the information that we used to plan the trip. And then I called Brooks Range Aviation and talked to them several times, told them what our plans were. And, you know, they would say, yeah, well, that's a good idea, or that's not a good idea, mm-hmm. or we can take you there, or we can't take you there, that type of thing. So that's how it
works. And by doing these trips over the years, we've kind of figured out what gear works the best, stoves, sleeping pads, tents, everything like that. So we had a lot of things already figured out before.
Yeah, so a lot of the camping gear isn't that different, whether you're doing a river trip or a bike trip or backpacking. It's, you know, a lot of overlap with the gear, and we've all done multi-day trips before, so we sort of already had that gear and knew how much food we need and things like that.
Although I think we all bought new gear for this, so I bought, you know, a spiffy lightweight tent that I didn't have before. Again, weight being a consideration for the fly-in to the put-in.
I bought a spiffy lightweight backpack.
Yeah, I don't think I had anything new, but I did have a spare paddle.
Yeah.
And was it spiffy?
It wasn't spiffy, but it was useful.
All right. That counts, too. So what
I
was?
I thought it was spiffy.
Yeah.
When you need it, anything is spiffy.
That's right.
What was the jumping off point for this? Where'd you catch your flight?
We all met in Fairbanks and then flew to Bettles. We spent the night in Bettles, and the next morning took a float plane from Bettles to Gidicke Lake, which is the headwaters of the Alatna River. And we put all of our gear together there and started down the river. Went down the river and all the way to Takahula Lake, and there was a short portage from the river to the lake. We did that and paddled across the lake.
Into a headwind.
Pretty big headwind.
That's the equivalent of paddling uphill both ways, I think, if you're in a headwind.
Yeah, for sure. Especially with a pack raft, they catch a lot of
wind. Especially at the end of an 11-day trip when you're kind of a little tired.
Yeah, so we spent the night there at Takahula Lake, and the next morning a plane picked us up, took us back to Bettles. We spent another night in Bettles and then flew back to Fairbanks and Kenai the next day.
You mentioned a couple times that weight was an issue in packing. What was the restriction there?
I don't remember the exact amount. We had 800 pounds or 900 pounds we could take on the airplane.
Right, and divided by, you know, the four of us, you know, 220 pounds a piece average is what we figured that we could bring.
And that counts yourselves as well, right?
Right. So, yeah, that was a big consideration. And, you know, so we had to weigh all our gear, weigh our food, weigh ourselves. I went on a little diet before the trip started just to shave another couple pounds, that sort of thing. So, and that's why we invited Julie along, because she's a little bit smaller than the rest of us, so we can cheat on weight a little bit.
No, that just means she gets to take more stuff. That's
what she thought, but she's not here. Good.
And I think actually Julie is here. Speaking of the fourth person, we now have Julie Stevens in the studio. Thanks for joining us, Julie.
Thank you for inviting us.
So your friends here, fellow adventurers, were just talking about the packing restrictions and getting ready for the flight. How did you guys all divvy up the weight? Was it just hope you all combined are under 800 pounds, or were you pretty strict about that in the packing?
Well, Julie, right from the get-go, she got all her gear out, weighed everything to give us all a rough idea of how much it would be. And then using that information, we all just kind of did the same thing eventually.
So what was the packing process like for you all? How did you decide what to take, what to not take?
I think for me, it was, for all of us actually, it was the essentials. What do you need to be able to handle 11 days and really work on everything lightweight and no waste.
Yeah, I started, like I do for any trip, is just put a pile of gear and clothes and everything that I thought that I would like to have. And I did that maybe 2 or 3 weeks before the trip, and then just culled that down to things that I knew that I needed to have. And, you know, there are priorities. You know, I brought a fifth of bourbon because I knew that that was mm-hmm. definitely going to be needed. So,
and a chair. You brought a chair.
I brought a chair.
And he let us know every day that he had a chair.
I take it other people did not see the necessity of the chair.
We had bear barrels to sit on, which get a little hard after a while.
All right, Wally, what about you? What was your pack list?
Well, I pretty much have the same list for all these trips. You know, backpack, sleeping bag, sleeping pad, tent. Food is the big thing that weighs a lot, but you kind of eat your way to a lighter weight as the trip progresses. The one thing that I did take that I considered a luxury was a pair of Crocs, you know, to wear on the feet around the camp. And they didn't weigh very much, but they were kind of bulky, so they took up a little space. But they were really great at the end of the day after you've been wearing. We had neoprene boots, so our feet were wet all day long. And after your feet have been wet all day long, it was great to put those on and walk around camp and whatnot.
Okay. Julie, what were your essentials and what counted as creature comforts that you splurged on weight for?
I splurged on a pillow. It's an inflatable pillow, but that to me was a big deal. I need a pillow.
Doug and Julie also brought watches, which...
non-essential items. Right. Actually, Julie inspired me to bring a pillow, too. I got tired of stuffing sweaters under my head all the time, so pillow is nice.
The watches turned out to be fairly essential because up north in the summertime... Mm. 5 in the afternoon looks just like 10 at night, looks just at 3 in the morning. You can't really tell what time it is whatsoever. So they put a restriction on Wally and I about how many times we could ask what time it was.
Because you guys were out there in July, correct?
Right.
All right.
Yeah, so if you wake up in the middle of the night, you don't know if it's midnight or 3 or time to get up. So it is definitely handy to have.
Well, some of you know whether it's midnight or 3, or some of you apparently not.
Exactly.
Sure. I had to wait until I heard Doug's zipper on his tent open every morning before I knew it was 7 o'clock, because he had a watch and he was getting up every morning at 7 o'clock. But it's true. You would wake up at 2 in the morning and think, wow, it's light out. It's time to get up and go. And it's the middle of the night.
And Doug, what about you? What was your pack list or your thought process for what to take or what to not take?
Well, I similar thing. I've got all my gear piled out and was looking at a lightweight tent and pad and a sleeping bag, and just sort of had everything piled out. And then I started sort of accumulating food that I knew I was going to be eating, and bagging it into different meals and counting up the meals.
And Doug and Julie, to an extent too, they brought really good food. Wally and I just did like freeze-dried stuff, but Doug was sauteing pine nuts and things like that, and we were envious.
Nice. So do you guys pool resources at all with gear or food, or are you kind of each traveler for themselves?
We did pool some gear. Julie had an InReach, which was our communication with the outside world while we're in there. I think I had the first aid kit and a spare paddle, and I
brought the Snickers bars.
The Snickers bars, exactly.
I want to say that I'm thankful that Doug brought Tyvek tape, and we use that for our pack wraps and my tent, because my tent fell apart on the 4th or 5th day.
That is not something you want to have happen when you're out in the middle of nowhere. So was the tent in good shape ahead of time, or is this a downside of the ultralight gear that's maybe not as durable as other stuff?
Yes, it was working until the second night.
She tried to use it as a kite, and it really wasn't, that's not the purpose that it had.
It flew into the air, the wind took it, and it was like Wizard of Oz, the tent flying across the river, and... Yes, and I ran across the river and thinking I got it, I was able to grab it before it took off again. And I was thinking my friends were going to be right there beside me, 5, 10 feet away. I turned around and they're on the other shore laughing.
Well,
had to get our cameras.
We had to get the camera. And then once the pictures were taken, I did cross the river to help Julie.
They did. They were. Jim was very, very kind. But I found out later, I think because of flying across the river and landing, I somehow had damaged my tent. And thanks to Doug's Tyvek tape, I was able to tape it together. And it handled the rainstorm and the wind. So
that was the other thing that the Tyvek tape was good for was we made a rookie mistake and put our bear canisters inside the tubes of our pack rafts. And then every time we would hit a rock, it would make a little ding in our pack rafts. Some of them went through the fabric, and we had tiny pinhole leaks on our pack rafts. So we used a lot of the Tyvek tape to stop the leaking air.
Yeah, it did come in handy. But I think also it is sort of a trade-off when you're talking about the ultra-lightweight gear, that the lighter it gets, the less durable it is. So it is sort of a trade-off. A sturdier tent probably would have survived a tumble in the river, but it also would have been heavier.
That is Doug Armstrong. He's here with Jim Bennett, Wally Hufford, and Julie Stevens, talking about preparing for their 11-day trip down the Alatna River in Gates of the Arctic National Park this past July. This is KDLL Adventure Talks on the Kenai Conversation. We're not taking calls this morning, but if you have questions for our adventurers, you can ask them at the live Adventure Talk at 7 p.m. Thursday tomorrow at the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center. So when you're saying lightweight, give me some examples of what counts as that, because camping gear has come a million miles from, even 20 years ago. So what are you considering lightweight? What kinds of tents or sleeping bags or backpacks are you taking on these trips?
Well, the tents, nowadays, it's not ultralight if a two-man tent isn't around 3 pounds. So they, back in the day it was 7 pound tent for two man tent, but, two of you had the same tent and then the other two of us had different tents, but my tent it doesn't actually have poles. The trekking poles that I carry anyway are the poles that hold the tent up. And so that saves quite a bit of weight that way. So if you can dual purpose things, it definitely helps. But the stove, we had different stoves. I had a little handmade stove that I've got the design off the internet out of cat food cans, and the stove weighs like an ounce.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so the fuel is what is where the weight is when you're carrying that stove.
So you flew out with a float plane. I know sometimes if you're taking flights, they don't always let you have gas containers. Was that an issue on the flight as well, or were you able to bring out fuel for stoves?
That was an issue when we flew two Bettles from Fairbanks. They had to take our canisters.
You couldn't have canisters.
Oh, you couldn't. Yeah. So I had a fuel bottle that had denatured alcohol in it. That was my fuel, and they let me take it, but it had to go in a completely different box, sealed off separately. And I think that was the same with the bear canisters, right? Yeah,
we had the bear spray. Right?
Yeah.
And the rest of us had to buy our fuel in Bettles. So.
Yeah, definitely always something to check if you're taking a puddle jumper flight somewhere. What can you take on the plane and what can you not take on the plane? Because getting somewhere without your fuel or bear spray or whatever else gets restricted is not a good time. So 3 pound tents, what about packs? Since you guys did a kind of a hike in the middle of it too, and I don't even know if hike is the right terminology for this. Aragetch Peak sounds a little more robust than just a hike.
Yeah, the first few miles were bushwhacking, so yeah, we followed game trails until we discovered a social trail.
Yeah, but we weren't doing any actual rock climbing, but it was fairly rough starting and trying to find the actual social trail. So it was fairly slow going. But the packs, we had, again, two people had the same pack and two others had different packs. The pack I have is a pack that I've bought years ago when I was hiking the Pacific Crest Trail, and it's not an ultralight pack per se. It's sort of a medium weight pack, but it's pretty darn comfortable.
What about the rest of you guys?
I bought this. That was the treat that I got myself for going on this trip, was a Hyperlight backpack. Very light. I think it's just over 2 pounds. Julie saw it and went home that afternoon and ordered one. They're great. They are very lightweight. They're extremely tough, but they're white and they get dirty easily. So
they're kind of pricey too, aren't they?
They're kind of expensive, yeah. But it was worth it. They're great fitting packs. You can carry a lot of weight in them, and they carry things great. They're pretty much waterproof. We had a downpour on our way back from the Aragetch Peaks. It just started to rain real heavily, and things got a little wet inside during that time. But otherwise, everything stayed dry. And what we would do is strap them as we were floating down the river. We'd strap them on the bow of the pack rafts, and they stayed pretty, or my stuff stayed pretty good and dry when they were up there.
And another thing that's important for our packs were to fit our bear canisters. They're large and they're awkward. And so that was my key, to find a pack, lightweight, durable, rainproof, and hold all my gear and my bear canister.
Yeah, nothing will screw up a backpack like one of those giant bear cans. You get everything shoehorned in there just right, and then, oh, yeah, this has to go in there somewhere. For me, that's kind of one of the fun parts about doing group trips like you guys do, is checking out everybody else's gear and get up close and personal kind of reviews and try stuff out. Sounds like you both got the memo on a tent and a pack. Are there other things that you've learned gear-wise just from seeing other people that you think is a great idea, or maybe think they're a little crazy for being so devoted to some particular thing?
I like the evolution of the sleeping pad. And, you know, when the Therm-a-Rest came along, I thought that was the greatest camping invention. But now the sleeping pads, we're not using the traditional Therm-a-Rest, but like fully inflatable sleeping pads that are really, really light, and the most comfortable sleeping pad I've ever had in my life, in fact. So the Neo, I think it's called.
Neo Air.
Neo Air, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what is the oldest piece of gear that any of you are currently regularly using?
My body.
Well, that's got a warranty, I hope, so.
No, it's past the warranty, I can tell you.
Good question.
Oldest gear.
What's worth keeping around, and what have you long since ditched and upgraded?
I would say probably the oldest piece of gear I've got, and I still use it on every trip, is a down sleeping bag that I got in 2003 before I did the Pacific Crest Trail. And it's a 40-degree bag, so it's not that warm, but it's a great summer bag, and the thing weighs like a pound, mm-hmm. and it is... It's super light, and it's just a great piece of gear. So I've never replaced it because I haven't seen anything that's better.
And there's always the threat of water with down. How does it do if it gets wet?
Not well, but I haven't had to find that out, because it's actually, to me, the weight, you save more weight with the down than you lose when you put it in a couple of waterproof layers.
Fair enough. Anybody else have some gear that they are devoted to, despite there being fancy new options out there?
I think the oldest thing I have is a Leatherman that's probably 15 or 20 years old that I take on all my trips, and it's got all the tools, you know, on it that I would need. So I just keep bringing it along.
I think for mine, just like Wally, is a Swiss Army knife that I've had for 30 years that has, like Wally said, all the tools on it. And especially the scissors, because I got a lot of holes in my raft. So I spent many days, many evenings fixing my holes in my raft.
And how is that done? Is that with the Tyvek tape again, or some other method?
There's a couple ways. The Tyvek tape goes on the inside, because I've spent many evenings. Patch and go, a clear tape you put on the outside. So you put tape.
Tenacious tape. That.
Yeah, that, yeah. That, yes, tenacious tape. So there's a type of tape you put on the inside of our rafts. That was one thing we all purchased, were pack wraps that had zippers, so you could open up the chamber and fit canvas.
Your gear inside, plus two little like float bags that went inside that you could put gear in. So an extra little dry bag that also extra inflation as well that went in there, which is a brilliant idea. Just
and it is, in that way you can fix your holes on the inside, so you can put the tape on the inside because you have access because of the zipper, and tape on the outside.
That's Julie Stevens with Doug Armstrong, Wally Hufford, and Jim Bennett on KDLL Adventure Talks on the Kenai Conversation. This conversation is about planning their pack raft trip down the Alatna River in July. Tomorrow night at 7 at the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center, these guys will be sharing pictures and stories from their trip. That event is free for KDLL members and $5 for non-members. You can, of course, become a member of KDLL anytime by making a donation through our website, kdll.org. And if you have anyone who is missing this conversation at the moment but would like to listen later, you can also find audio of our shows on our website. Since we're talking packs, why don't you all tell me a little bit about what you took on this trip? And then I'm guessing some of you have had experience with previous pack raft versions. That's another area of gear that has just changed incredibly over the years.
Yeah, I have the original pack raft that I bought from Sherry Tinley up in Anchorage, the oval type, and I didn't use it on this trip. I ended up borrowing one from Tommy Kobelars and with the extended bow and stern, which was great because we had whitewater on this trip, and my oval pack raft would have been difficult to maneuver in that. And we all had the zipper compartments on this, so we were able to store our gear inside. And all of them had different types of spray skirts. Mine was more of a whitewater one with a spray skirt that fit around a rim, around a lip. But Tom is a little bit shorter than I am, so his pack raft is a little bit shorter for me. And so my knees would kind of pop up a little bit, and if I had any force, I would pop the spray skirt off. In theory, it worked pretty good, but...
Road testing, river testing, not so much.
Right, but now that's definitely on my Christmas wish list, is to get myself one of those chambered, zippered pack rafts. So,
yeah, and I think that the zipper, the access to the inside of the tubes is pretty essential if you're doing a multi-day trip with the pack rafts, because you just end up with too much gear and sort of top heavy if you have everything up top and it's pretty bulky and awkward. But the amount of gear you can put inside those rafts is pretty amazing. I mean, the fact that we were, even though we probably shouldn't have, the fact that we were able to get the bear barrels in and a whole bunch of other gear, that first day or two when we were putting the barrels inside, I really didn't have that much on deck. I mean, you could put almost everything inside. So that's definitely essential for multi-day type of trip.
Stupid question, but if you're putting that much in the tubes, how exactly are you still getting flotation?
Actually, the bags, you put all of your gear inside these, like they're duffel-sized bags. They have a tube that you blow up, so there's air in that bag around your gear.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then you shove that into the pack raft tube and then inflate the pack raft. So there's really a lot of air there.
Yeah. So here's Mr. Physics. So you still, once you get the gear in and you inflate the tubes, they're still taking up just as much volume as they would if you didn't have any gear in there. So you get the same amount of buoyancy. It's just that your weight is distributed differently. It's down lower.
Man, somebody was thinking when they designed those things.
Yeah. You can trust him. He's a science teacher.
Exactly.
Am I going to get quizzed on this later? So, Wally, what about you? What kind of pack raft are you using?
I have a Yukon Yak, and it's basically the same setup as everybody had with the airtight, watertight zipper. It's great. It's the size. I just looked on the chart that they had on the Alpaca Rafts page and bought the one that was supposed to fit me, and it does fit me well. And we used them in Yakutat. We even put fat bikes on the bow of them to go across rivers and bays, and that along with all of our camping gear. So they're quite amazing craft. And I think one of the things that these pack rafts have that Jim's original pack didn't have is an extension in the back that keeps the raft from tipping backwards when you get in it, because all the weight is towards the back of the raft.
Oh,
so there's,
gotcha.
I don't know, maybe 2.5 feet back there that's filled with air that keeps you from, like, popping wheelies as you go down the river. Mm-hmm.
How much do the pack rafts weigh?
I think they're all under or around 6.5 or 7 pounds.
My old school one is under 4 pounds.
That is just, that blows my mind that you can have that versatile of a watercraft for that little weight. It's crazy.
And they're bomber. I mean, we did put, I didn't put a hole in the one that I had, but a few abrasions. But the old school one I've had for 11 or 12 years, and I've yet to have a patch on it. So they're really bomber, really good quality gear.
And talking about weight, it was nice on a second to last day, we needed to paddle across Takahula Lake to get to the shore where the pilot would pick us up the next day. And so it was rough. There were serious waves. And having that weight in our rafts stabilized it. And going across the lake, I think it was a mile long, it was solid. It was secure. I was not afraid at all. And it was rough.
And you sit pretty low in these things, right? You're not up real high out of the water.
You're right in the water, yeah. Yeah.
Do you stay very dry then, or is that a... Well, I guess you have spray skirts. Do those do the job?
At the first, when we first started, the water was rougher, and we were bouncing around a lot. There were a lot of waves.
Yeah, day three was continual white water.
Yeah, when we were wet probably the first, second, third day. And then when the water became much more tranquil, we were dry, or I was, all day. Didn't have any water come over the edges at all.
And we really lucked out with weather as well. We hardly had any rain when we were out on the river or camping. At night, a few times we had rain, and on our backpack trip, we had a big downpour that we went through. But for the most part, the weather was great.
It was difficult to believe we were above the Arctic Circle because it was 80 degrees, clear blue skies.
Wow.
Almost every day.
And we had bugs the first couple of days, but not nearly as bad as I expected. And then after that, it wasn't bad at all. But the interesting thing about one of the rainstorms, was it the second night? We had been in clear water. We'd been going through perfectly clear water, and then it poured the second night. We woke up in the morning, the water was still clear, but while we were having breakfast, it slowly turned brown, and was that for like that for several days. I guess all the side streams were just feeding all the silt in.
Oh, interesting.
It was like paddling in mocha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what's the terrain like up there?
At the put-in, it's a high tundra. There's no trees. There's brush. And mountains on either side were in a steep mountain valley. And as we got further downriver, trees started to appear. But mountains pretty much on either side the whole trip.
Yeah, we timed where we got out perfectly because we got out basically right where the mountains backed off from the river and mm-hmm. the river started to meander afterwards. We could see from the flight out that it looked like it would have been a whole lot more work and a whole lot less scenery if we'd kept going by boat.
No, you just start squiggling around, not covering much distance.
Right.
Wind, was that much of an issue?
The last 2 days.
Although the tent did go up.
Right.
In the air. and that was kind of... A pack raft did as well.
But we learned from that. We learned from then on to put our tent near vegetation. So it was a positive learning experience, and it ended well. I was able to get my tent back.
Spoken like an educational professional. It was a positive learning experience.
Yeah, we had set up camp that second night, and then the wind started coming, and we all just said, I think we should move the tents. And on our relocation is when the kite incident happened. So,
and you also have to be careful because the boats are so light. So yeah. The boats can blow into the water as well.
Yeah, another downside of that ultralight gear, especially the material it's made out of, mm-hmm. it does share some properties with kites for sure.
Well, because all our gear was stored inside the rafts, pretty much every night the rafts would be deflated and then kind of rolled up and pushed to the side or weighted down with rocks. So it's a ritual every day is to pack up camp, load up, stuff the chambers of the pack raft, pump it up, and get going. So.
And what do you use for pumps and how much do those weigh?
About an ounce they weigh.
Oh, yeah. Well, all right then.
So the pack rafts come with a bag. And the bag's got just sort of a screw on. You just screw it into the boat at one end. It's got a little fixture. A little valve, and then the other end has got a couple of rods so you can hold the bag open and you just scoop up air and and squeeze it into the boat. And that gets 90% of the air into the boat, and then you seal that off and do the rest with lung power.
None of that foot accordion action that you used to have? No?
No, wow. But it takes maybe 5 minutes to set your boat up.
So is there any downside to these fantastical pack rafts?
There's no motor mount for them, so
Okay, there it is. How comfortable are they to be in for 10, 11 days?
Oh, I'll answer that one. I couldn't walk upright I actually didn't fly to Kenai at the end of the trip. I was staying up north because I had a class in Denali, but I had a week to kill, and I spent about half of that at Chena Hot Springs. my back was killing me at the end.
And is that just from paddling for that long, or is it kind of the ergonomics of being in a pack raft?
For me, it was the ergonomics of being in the pack raft. I'm 6'3", and I'm pretty long-waisted, and I don't know if just the leverage was different for me or what, but it really hurt my back. But I understand that pack raft has newer, sort of better seats now that have a little more support, so I might be looking into those before the next trip.
And it is helpful to take frequent breaks, because I think all of us, after an hour and a half going down the river, your back would start to ache, your legs would start to ache. So it's a good idea to pull over and get out, stand up, walk around a little bit.
Well, and that's what the scenery is for. Mm-hmm. You didn't have any problems with bears. Did you see many critters?
We saw a few caribou the first two or three days, and then the occasional moose. But every day we saw bear sign, bear tracks, wolf prints, but we just didn't see them. We didn't see people either, which was really a good thing.
I think we saw, we encountered three hikers when we were in going on the way into the Aragach Peaks. And then we saw a few people in the distance before we left the river to go to the Aragach Peaks, and that was it. That was all there was in the way of human activity while we were there.
It really is a pristine place. We didn't see any footprints of people otherwise, and we only saw one fire ring the entire 11 days, and that was up at the Aragach Peaks where someone had been camping, it looked like, and had built a fire ring. And maybe that camp along Aragach Creek, it looked like it had been used before. But it really had the feeling of things being the way that they have been for eons. It was really, really great that way.
Even flying in, the flight in from Bettles, I mean, usually when you do a bush flight in Alaska, you'll see four-wheeler tracks and snow machine tracks and things like that. Once we got a couple of miles from Bettles, we didn't see anything, no tracks on the ground at all. It was nice.
Obviously, the upside of being somewhere that remote is there isn't sign of other human activity. The downside, though, on the other side of that coin, there isn't sign of other human activity. So you really have to be on it as far as navigation. There's no, obvious trails or signs or campgrounds or anything to indicate that you're going where you want to go. River makes that a little easier, of course, but how did you plan out a route? How did you handle navigation along the way?
Well, we had looked at the maps. We knew where we were going to start at Gedike Lake and where we were going to end at Takahula Lake, and we knew where Aragach Creek was, but we actually used Doug and Julie had downloaded maps on their cell phones. Great pieces of navigation nowadays in the wilderness. And so we were using that and a GPS, which we had marked waypoints so that we knew when we were getting close to Aragach Creek. And then we could look up the valley from where we were and see the Aragach Peaks. So we knew we had to follow that valley to the peaks. We also, from reading trip reports and whatnot, knew that there was a social trail. Most of the trip reports said that it was on the left-hand side of the river, but there was a trip report that said it was on the right-hand river. So we didn't know really which side of the river it was on for sure. We decided to take the left side of the river because that's what most of the reports had indicated. And we found it after about a mile and a half hiking from camp, following Gein trails. Right. Yeah. And it went right all the way up to the Aragetch Peaks. So it's not on any map, and it's not an official trail, but it's used by hikers, mountain climbers, that kind of thing. So it's pretty well established.
It's well established, but it's not a maintained trail, so you definitely get...
A lot of bushwhacking along the way.
Yeah, bushwhacking and boggy areas, and you definitely are going through quite a bit of alders, so you need to be talking to bears the whole time.
Oh, the beloved alders. Nothing like bushwhacking through alders. This is KDLL Adventure Talks on the Kenai Conversation. I'm Jenny Nyman, talking to Jim Bennett, Wally Hufford, Julie Stevens, and Doug Armstrong about their 11-day float trip down the Alatna River. If you want to hear more about the trip, you can come to the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center tomorrow at 7 p.m. They'll be doing a live photo presentation and sharing stories and talking about gear and all that good stuff. At the moment, we're talking safety. What else did you guys do to keep yourselves out of trouble?
Julie also brought an InReach because, I don't know, some other local adventurers use one to get rescued off a glacier. I don't know if you interviewed them for the show.
I think I heard something about that, I seem to believe those things are pretty handy.
Yeah, so Julie had one, which is kind of funny. It was like day 5 or day 6 or something where we said, Julie, maybe you should show the rest of us how that thing is used just in case something happens to you.
And the InReach now is compatible with your iPhone.
It's pretty handy.
Yes, so you turn your InReach on and your iPhone onto Bluetooth, and now your iPhone is the InReach. And it's so much easier to send that message to your family and friends. So and then when they receive it, they get the text, of course, but also the coordinates and a map of where we were every time I sent that text.
I have not gone quite this far down the InReach rabbit hole, but you can apparently set them up that they will post to social media.
Yes.
So everybody can see where you're going, which I have people tell me you should do that. But that's a little more in touch. That's a little more InReach than I care to be when I am out in the wilderness.
There is such a thing as over-documentation.
Yes, that is true. Leaving something to the imagination is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, we didn't bring like a GoPro camera or anything like that. And so day 3, when it was continual whitewater, we hardly have any pictures of that because we were busy doing other things that didn't necessitate bringing out a camera. So,
you know, paddling and trying to stay upright. Well, that just means that you get to inflate the stories now and no one will know the difference. So InReach and then having maps. Did you have backup hard copy, any kind of maps, or you just trust into electronics while you're out there?
We brought the National Geographic topo map of Gates of the Arctic National Park. So we had that, and then we had the 2 cell phones with the maps downloaded, and then I had a GPS. So we were pretty good navigational-wise. And I think there's a GPS on the InReach, too, isn't there, Julie?
Yeah, there is, and... But Wally's really good with his GPS, and he had the waypoints. And so then I kept my InReach just used for texting family that night and for emergency. So I really tried not to use it a lot because I wanted to make sure just in case there was an emergency, that it was ready to go. And so it was nice that Wally had his GPS, and he could have it on for a couple hours if he needed to.
I've thought about that before with the InReach, you know, because it is so easy to text and send waypoints and whatnot. And I've thought, man, if I burn up all my battery doing this and then I actually need to send an SOS and I'm out of juice, I probably deserve to not get rescued at that point.
And battery power is an issue nowadays. And I think we had a couple of backup batteries with us as well. Mm-hmm.
Electronics in a water environment are always a little dicey, too. What do you guys, what's your strategies for keeping things like that dry?
Dry bags.
Yeah.
Okay.
I made a track, a GPS track of the trip, and I would start it as soon as we would start moving in the morning and put it in a dry bag and put it in the backpack where it wouldn't get water on it. I wouldn't take it out until noon so we could check how far we had gone, and then put it right back in those watertight containers and then take it out when we were done for the day and turn it off.
And is that track now proprietary, or do you share that? Are you guys doing a trip report that you're going to pass on this knowledge, or is it just if people know that you went and can ask you, you can share tips with them?
No, I have a blog called Basecamp Nikiski, where I put them
the pictures,
pictures, yep, and a little story. I don't have you guys seen that yet?
No.
And also, we're going to be doing the presentation Thursday night?
Yes, you are. Thursday night, 7 p.m. at the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center. So if anyone wants to come, ask these guys questions, take a look at their gear, see some pictures, and hear some more stories from the trip, please come.
Yeah.
So safety-wise, you're covering a lot of good things here, but do you have other safety gear that you always bring or safety procedures that you recommend people follow on your trips?
Well, there is some safety gear that I didn't bring that I will definitely bring in the future. I have a little bit of whitewater kayaking experience, and I thought, well, the worst this river is going to be is class 2-. It's not going to be such a big deal. So I didn't bring a PFD, a personal flotation device, and I was going I thought that if the water got gnarly, I would just kind of inflate my sleeping pad and tie it around my chest, and that would be good. And that's pretty much what we did for the Yakutat trip. I don't know how many of us brought PFDs on that.
I don't think anybody brought one on that.
On this trip, being that we're on the river all the time, it was definitely a rookie mistake for me not to bring a PFD, and that will never, ever, ever happen again.
Well, and you're sitting here, so it couldn't have been that big of a oversight, but did you dump? Did you swim?
There's no pictures. It wasn't on Facebook, so
I'm going to take that as a yes.
These guys really didn't see it happen, so
still going to take that as a yes.
Yes, and that's why the extra paddle came in handy. My paddle around a blind bend in the river with sweepers and the current pushing me over there, just at the crux moment, my paddle shaft cracked and I lost a blade. And I got up close and personal with two sweepers. So, yes.
Is there any way to judge or get any sort of sense for what kind of water conditions you're going to be encountering? None of you had ever done this river before. There are trip reports, but so much can be left up to conditions and water levels and rain levels and all that. Is there any way that you can kind of have a sense of what you're getting yourselves into?
Prepare for the worst.
Yeah, sometimes you have to pull out and walk what you can of, walk ahead and see what the conditions are. And one of the times we did that really did sort of save our bacon, because there was a pretty narrow channel with a sweeper going most of the way across it, and we had to engineer it. We actually got up there and pulled the sweeper back and tied it back so that we could get through.
The other thing was, before we started going down the river, we knew that it was a very braided river, and it would be easy if one person got off on one braid and the rest of the group was in a different braid, we would lose sight of each other and we wouldn't know who was farther down river, who was still up river, anything like that. So we kind of made a pact that we would stay together and, always be pretty much inside of each other, which I think was a great safety thing, because it could have easily happened that we could have been separated, and that would have been a huge, huge problem. So we always knew where each other was, and after 11 days of being not more than 100 or 200 yards away from each other, we were probably, I just think that was a good safety feature.
Also, these three guys are river experts. They can really read the river. And so that was comforting for me to know that we can handle whatever was around the next corner. And they were great about keeping me like in the third position. So I had two guys ahead of me so I could watch. And then there was Jim behind me just in case I needed to be picked out of the water.
Sounds like the reverse was a little more the case.
Self-rescue skills. I'm not going to say another word.
There were times, though, on the third day where we just didn't have much choice but to go for it, because we were basically going through a canyon and there was no walking ahead to
scout
what the
right
conditions were. So you just sort of...
And there were lots of sweepers on that river.
So you would just sort of cautiously go around the bend and be ready to back paddle if you had to, but sort of went for it.
And we did have to walk around a couple couple sections that just were treacherous. There'd be a root wad in the middle of the channel or a steep undercut cliff or something like that. So
that's Jim Bennett here with Wally Hufford, Julie Stevens, and Doug Armstrong on KDLL Adventure Talks on the Kenai Conversation. I'm Jenny Nyman, and we're talking about getting ready for their 11-day pack raft trip down the Alatna River in July. We're going to be having a live photo presentation with these guys tomorrow at 7 p.m. at the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center. It's free for KDLL members and $5 for non-members. And it sounds like you all had your own complete setup, camp, food, everything in your own pack raft as well. One of the thoughts when you're going ultralight is to maybe share gear, double up in tents or double up in stoves or whatever, but it sounds like everybody kind of had their own. So if you did get separated, you guys would have been fine camping out.
Yeah, and besides, when you're within 100 feet of each other all day, you really don't want to share a tent.
Well, yeah, there is that too. You got back to the lake at the pickup at that point. Did you weigh gear again?
The weight issue is how much weight we lost. Because we were exercising for 11 days, that was the weight loss of our own body, or less fat, I guess.
Yeah, that and we'd eaten our way through quite a bit of food. So they didn't even really check our weight on the way out, because they know we're going to be lighter. I think it's the hunting crews that go in that have to worry about their weight coming out.
Oh, good point, yes. So what did you guys bring for food? Jim, you said two of you went a little ultralight and Doug went a little fancier.
Yeah, I've freeze-dried food and I just don't get along very well. So I do a lot of like rice and lentils, different varieties of that. And I've got couscous and polenta and corn pasta and things like that. And just sort of four or five standard meals that I just sort of rotate through.
But he would brown the pine nuts in olive oil, and the smell from that was amazing. And then he would add dried tomatoes. Yeah. Anyway, his meals looked wonderful.
And the rest of you had what? Mountain House, beef stroganoff, spaghetti, that whole bag? Yep.
Tasted delicious, though.
Well, when you're hungry enough, dang near anything tastes delicious. What was your first meal when you got back to civilization?
To the Bettles Lodge, we each had an adult beverage or two. And what was it? It was like a salmon.
A salmon special.
Yeah, yeah, there was a salmon special.
We had a hamburger. I think I had a hamburger.
Yeah, I think I did the salmon special.
Nice. Yeah, 11 days, I guess, probably isn't enough for you to miss civilization and grocery store creature comforts too bad. But always nice to get back to the chocolate and or whatever else you guys are craving.
And a real shower.
Ah, yes. That is always a good thing.
I think something we haven't mentioned, actually, speaking of water, though, is drinking water. Mm. And we all had filters with us, but we were in untouched territory, and most of the time I was just drinking straight out of the river. And after that night of rain, when the river turned to sort of a latte color, we were looking for side streams that were clear and just filling canteens with that. And
yeah, so around 3 o'clock each day, we would start looking for a camp place with a clear stream that was coming out of the mountains and a gravel bar. So we were successful almost every night.
Yeah, and then it was just sort of a personal choice as to whether people were going to filter or not. I don't think I filtered the whole trip, and it was good.
I did at the beginning, and then it was like, this is taking too long, so...
I filtered the latte out of the Alatna, but all the side creeks, I just drank right from them.
So. Nice. So what's next on your adventure list? What are you guys scheming for the next trip?
Well, we've been looking pretty seriously at a trip over in Wrangell St. Elias, and we're trying to combine the Goat Trail with the Nazina River. So we'll do a backpack along the Goat Trail, and then
which is a scary steep traverse that just mm-hmm. goes across this mountain.
Yeah, if it's named after goats, it's probably not a real valley floor sort of deal.
No, it looks pretty steep. But we're hoping to combine that with a pack raft trip, and we're just in the beginning stages of talking about that. And we need to find out whether or not we can drop off our pack rafts and some food about halfway through the trip so that we don't have to carry the boats and extra food all the way from the beginning. So we'll be working on that and hopefully do that next summer.
All right. This is sounding like a hobby to get you through the winter, is figuring out logistics for the next trip.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, if anyone out there has questions for our adventurers, please come out Thursday night at 7 p.m. to the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center. They'll be doing a photo and video slideshow presentation and talking more about the trip. They'll have a lot of gear on display and are happy to answer questions. So thank you all for being here. We've got Jim Bennett, Wally Hufford, Julie Stevens, and Doug Armstrong. I'm Jenny Nyman with KDLL Adventure Talks / Kenai Conversation. Thanks for tuning in.